Every Friday on the island of Molokai is a holiday. It's called Aloha Friday, and everyone sings No Work Till Monday. Malama means to be kind or to take care of. And who is your mama? Mother Earth. Our opening words are taken again from the Tales of the Night Rainbow. Aloha is being a part of all, and all being a part of me. When there is pain, it is my pain. When there is joy, it is mine also. I respect all that is as part of the Creator and part of me. I will not willfully harm anyone or anything. When food is needed, I will take only my need and explain why it is being taken. The earth, the sky, the sea are mine to care for, to cherish, and to protect. This is Hawaiian. This is aloha.
The dominant religion of Cuba is called Santeria, and it's a mix of Yoruba culture and religion, polytheistic traditions, with a layer of Catholicism on top. And the services in Cuba for Santeria are a celebration of the different orishas, the many, many gods that are the spirits of all of the parts of life, the wind and the god of the drums, and we're going to sing a song to the god of the ocean, Yemaya. When I was studying in Cuba, I saw Yemaya come down and possess the bodies of believers and provide counsel and advice to those who were present in the worship services. And in my first trip to Cuba, Yemaya gave me counsel as well and told me I had some studying to do. I think that was true. And the services are a true celebration. They're maybe a little bit more like a barbecue than anything we might have on Sunday morning. They go for hours and hours. They go all day long with drumming and dancing and home-brewed rum passed around freely. But the services are really a celebration of all of the spirits of the earth, the spirits of all of those things that affect our lives and the natural forces of the world. This is a song for Yemaya, the god of the ocean.
Yemaya, orubini laeo, Yemaya. Yemaya, orubini laeo, Yemaya. Egua ho yakota ele seke osun Yemaya orubini lae Yemaya orubini lae o Yemaya Yemaya orubini lae o Yemaya
Yemaya. As you're willing and able this morning, please rise for the chalice lighting in our opening hymn. By the way, you may need a little bit of extra space for this song because of these arm motions, so feel free to spread out a little bit. Give yourself some room. May our chalice shine all through our lives. May our hearts be open. May our minds be still, may our truth be spoken, and may our lives fulfill this promise of peace. May our chalice shine all through our lives. May our chalice shine all through our lives. May our will be connection. No one left inside.
Yeah, it's a rerun.
Ah, okay. We are swimming Walden Pond. We will leave no child inside. Global warming.
We are studying global warming. We are studying global warming. We are studying global warming. Icebergs in a jar.
We are climbing trees and mountains. Child inside.
We will leave no child inside. We will leave no child inside. We will leave no child inside. Nature is our guide.
Thank you, Hal. Thank you all. Please be seated.
We would have a reading this morning. Nation connections are made slowly, but we need to make sure that we squeeze our time in because we have such a full schedule this morning. So I invite you to read that when you go back to your home congregations, number 568. Connections are made slowly, and think about all the connections you made here at Summer Institute. Winning the right to be heard is extremely challenging. And winning the right to listen is even harder. Hawaiians love to do what they call talk story. And that is the colloquial pidgin for visiting. And so when they go to talk story, they go to be with their relatives, they go to visit. So this morning I want to talk story with you. When Father Damien came to Molokai in 1873 to minister to the leper colony at Kalapapa, the already established Congregationalists had spread a rumor that he was a papist devil. So the aunties that are very wise, they got together and they invited Father Damien to a luau to talk story. Now, he was famous for wearing this big, broad padre hat, and he had his clerical robe on, a symbol of his calling as a priest. And when he came to talk story, the aunties cornered him, and somehow they pulled back his hat, and they thought, my goodness, there aren't any horns there. And then they pushed him farther into the corner, and he wondered what was going on because he had never been this close to women before, and they started feeling his behind. Oh, my goodness, there's no tail there. He wasn't a devil. And besides, he climbed up and down the 2,000-foot Pali cliffs to minister and to care for and to feed and to bury and to console those outcasted lepers trapped forever by ignorant laws. Father Damien also built 4 wooden churches topside and 1 church far down below in the leper settlement. And on a Sunday, he would travel 20 miles by foot and by mule in order to share in 3 to 5 masses. With the help of Mother Mary, Aunt Mother Mary Ann, and Brother Dutton, he established a girls' and a separate boys' orphanage for children who had been torn from their families from all over the islands. And after 13 years of exhausting ministry, he too contracted Hansen's disease and he died. In 2010, he was officially deemed a saint by the Roman Catholic Church. And this coming October, Mother Mary Ann will also become a saint of that church. From 1865, when a decree was made that all those who had leprosy must be gathered together in a separate, secluded, isolated place so as not to contaminate the rest of the islands, all the way for more than 100 years, until 1969, they were sequestered on this particular isolated part of Molokai. These folks were arrested, whether they be children in school or whether they be old people. And for those who were married, they were given their divorce decree as they were arrested. And they were taken from their families, and they were forced to live in a peninsula. And in 1866, when they first were brought there, there was such raging currents of the ocean that they were dumped into the water. And they had to swim through the crashing surf to the shore. And there was nothing there. And it was a number of years that they lived in a sequence of the Lord of the Flies. In 1969, pretty recent, huh? Way long after a cure was found in 1942, those alive and remaining were allowed to go free, but many had no longer any connections to their families, and so they decided to remain. Today, there are more than a dozen folks still living there, and when the last person dies or leaves, the National Park Service will make it a historical national park. Now, the only ways to get down there is to pay your $250 to go about a 15-minute plane ride from topside down in a little Cessna airplane, or to make reservations months ahead of time to go down on the mule ride. And I've made that trip down the cliffs twice now on mules. Actually, it was the exact same mule, and his name was Stripe. And I asked the mule skinner why they named a spotted mule Stripe. And he quipped back, because he was a smart bleep, and that they wanted to keep him humble. That took a lot of discipline to put that bleep in there, let me tell you. I'm quite sure that some of you are wondering why I have teased you with stories about such fantastic islands as we see in Hawaii. Some of you have been there, and some of you even live there now. But for others, it sounds like a dream, a paradise that you may never see. An Aesop's fable with a happy ending for others, but not for me. For 2 years, I was the chaplain here at Summer Institute, and I would listen, and I would talk story with you, with people for whom Summer Institute was an annual nirvana, a Brigadoon, and a Camelot. So much that when they went back home to their congregations, they were disappointed. They had been high on the mountain, and now they were in the mud flats. For some, SI was more than a Rocky Mountain high. And the mundane humdrum of being back home made them depressed. I don't have a cure for that. I've been talking this week about the cure for nature deficit disorder. Leave no child inside. Leave no one inside. The state motto for Hawaii is taken from the words of King Kamehameha III. The life of the land is perpetuated in righteousness. All of Hawaii was annexed by the United States in 1898, the same year they went to war with Spain and went to war with the Philippines. And this is only after they had deposed Queen Lililukulani in 1893, so it took them 5 years to finally rationalize that they could really steal it. Barely 200,000 acres have been given back to the native Hawaiians, and that was only after an arduous campaign by Prince Kuhio in 1920. The island of Lanai. Lanai is a real island. It's just not your porch out the back way. The island of Lanai was again sold to a private individual just 1 month ago. 2,000 people, 14 miles of island, and how could anyone own it? The Hawaiians truly believe that what is immortal cannot be owned by what is mortal. The aina, not aina, the earth, is so sacred to them. There is a special movement in Hawaii to honor the earth and institute the ancient virtue of sustainability. And they call it Malama Your Mama. There is no separation between the spiritual realm and the physical realm. The Hawaiians realize how well we are connected. All are pieces of the puzzle, and all are part of the greater whole. The word malama means to care for, to honor, to serve, to earnestly love. And those little islands in the middle of the Pacific have a lot to say to the whole world. Malama your mama. I'm sorry I won't be able to keep my promise to tell you about Vlad the Impaler, better known to you as Count Dracula. Everybody asked, oh, you're going to Transylvania. What are you going to do? I said, I'm going to research Unitarianism. I did go to Vlad's boyhood home in Sisuara. Never did get to Bran Castle, which was his headquarters. And I got a little bit of some of the surrounding stories that prompted Bram Stoker to write Dracula, which was originally called The Undead. Let it suffice that it was too true that Vlad the Impaler made shish kebabs out of his friends and also out of his enemies. And he did have a liking for bloody wine. But Transylvania has much more than Dracula, especially for the Unitarians. There are 60,000 Unitarians there, all in beautiful, sustainable villages of about 600 people each. You know, here at SI, one of the things that feels really good is that at home, there's only one Unitarian minister for 35 miles. There's a small congregation of 125 out of 170,000. And we feel like this minuscule minority. But when you go to Transylvania, and they brought me to this high hill, and I could look down through the Hamrad Valley, and I saw six different steeples. And our guide, John Dale, said, each of those represents a town that is all Unitarians. And I felt how wonderful that was to be in the minority, in the majority for once. So used to being in the minority, oh boy. Here at SI, it feels good not to be in the minority, as we are, as you use in America at large. And doesn't it feel good? An incredible week that we've had together. Too good sometimes. It's very hard to go home. I want to tell you a story about a Transylvanian Unitarian minister named Francis Bolash. And if any of you go to Star King Seminary, you'll notice that there is a Bolash scholarship for seminary students from Transylvania. But Francis studied for the Unitarian ministry in Kolesvar, Transylvania. And then he came to the United States to study further at Star King School. And this was in the late 1920s. He learned so much from the American school about justice and social responsibility and human rights that he wanted to go back to Transylvania, not to teach in the seminary there, but to minister to a congregation of peasants. He convinced his girlfriend to go with him, and eventually they were married and sustained incredible hardships compounded by his contracting of tuberculosis and the situation surrounding the birth of their two children. They went to a little village called the Alabaster Village, and there's a special book, and I suspect that some of you will take the time to check this out on Amazon and get a copy of it. It's all about his story with his wife, Christine, and those 7 years that they had there in that place. Francis fought hard for the rights of the peasants. His liberal ideas also brought him in conflict with the Unitarian Church at that time. And he was constantly in confrontation with the Romanian government, and even to the danger of his freedom and also of his life. Their village was called the Alabaster Village, and I brought an alabaster rock to help us to remember. Never did turn that chalice on, did I? Usually there's someone at the home church that does that, but there you go. Anyway, take a peek at that piece of alabaster. It'll be there until after Meg is done today. Their village was called this Alabaster Village, and truly the whole place, all the way into the Torda Gorge. And you know that the edict of Torda, the diet of Torda, was in 1568, and that was where King John Sigismund had decreed toleration and freedom of religion. And that whole area has this particular rock. Francis died after 7 years of ministry in 1937. And Francis loved that village, and he loved its people. He loved them so much that he stayed there while his wife went back to America to give birth to their child, because she did not want that child to be born in Romania and have to go to be conscripted into the military. I'd like to read just a little piece from the Alabaster Village. Francis lived very poorly with his family, but he was a poet and a writer, and that writing is what got him into trouble with the Romanian government. But here is a poem. I stop here. Here I shall remain. I shall put down my roots here and not depart until my ideas have come to blossom and the bearing of fruit. The winged seed may indeed fly further, or if my effort should fail, should decompose and remain sterile without life, and then over me shall pass history's plow, turning up and later revealing what is required. You have all made this beautiful pilgrimage here to Summer Institute, some of you year after year after year. This morning I bid you adieu. You will go home tomorrow. T.S. Eliot tells us, we shall not cease from exploration, and the end of our exploring will be to arrive where we started and know the place for the first time. We all know how much we love Summer Institute. But to paraphrase an old, old song, if you are not in the place you love, love the place you're in. Bring SI back to your congregations. Show up on Sunday mornings. Spread the sense of life and love that you have here. And just like all that corn that got strewn all over, make sure that you bring that back and you nurture it and you coddle it and you help it to germinate so that others will be able to partake of the joy that we have had here in this delightful place.
Aloha. For over 2,500 years, Aesop's fables have been told to make sense of the world and our place in it. Today, we return to these stories, finding our own seven principles. Was Aesop the first UU? A builder of common ground and interfaith meaning-making, Aesop certainly was an uncle or auntie. Continue your exploration after SI at aesopfirstuu.com.
Throughout our workshop this week, we explored the principles, and today you're going to hear from three of our workshoppees, Marilyn, Dean, and Mike, and they're going to share with you a story that illustrates our last principle, the interdependent web, with the story of the peasant and the apple tree. And remember, no matter what you do in your life, whether you become rich or have a huge family or a big house or a nice car or whatever that is, whatever success it is, the greatest creation you will always create will be your story.
In a peasant's garden sat an old apple tree, which bore no fruit but served as a harbor for sparrows and grasshoppers and other small bugs and animals.
This tree is no good to me anymore. It bears no fruit. It's dead and ugly and falling apart. It makes my whole yard look bad. I will cut it down and make room for something else that will better serve.
Oh, please, Your Honor, I know this tree is old and gnarly, and it no longer bears fruit. But it is still useful. It provides a safe place for me to build my nest for my children. It shelters my family when it storms. If you cut the tree down, where will we live?
Yes, please, Your Honor. Even though the tree is itself dead, still small lichen and little weeds that grow out of it provide food for me and my family and my friends. If you cut the tree down, we'll have no food here.
Think of the children!
Did I hear something? Was someone saying something? No, it's just these old ears betraying me again.
Oh, please spare this tree, my home. I will sing you the most beautiful songs every morning. One more tree, I will.
Yes, oh, please. And I'll eat the weeds out of your garden so that your crops will flourish.
Oh, it is not just us, you know. Children in the neighborhood play tag, and this is a prized hiding spot.
And your elderly neighbor pauses to rest on this very stump on his way to market. There must be something we can do. Please.
Yes, something. Oh, dear. I can be a very good sport.
I swear I hear something. Did you say something? You heard it, right? Sort of this little squeaky-de-squeaky-de peep 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 squawk kind of sound. You? Maybe I should just chop off these useless ears of mine, huh? All right, you stubborn tree. Let's see if the third time's the charm, huh? What? What's this? There's something inside. Why, it looks as if the honeybees have been using this tree to build a honeycomb.
And we sparrows have been using the tree as a home for our families.
And my little grasshoppers have been well fed.
It has served your neighbors well.
Why, this is the most delicious honey I have ever tasted. Perhaps I should not cut down this tree, so that the honeybees can keep their honeycomb in the hollow and continue to make honey for me and my family. I had no idea. Oh, dear. I hope I didn't mess it up too much for them. Oh, sheesh. Oh, if someone would have just told me this old tree was still useful, I would never have cut into it. Yes, it seems my decision to cut down this tree was made in haste. I had not considered how my actions would impact the honeybees, not to mention depriving myself of this delicious honey. In the future, I will better consider how interdependently we all exist.
As should we all.
Thank you. I'm going to apologize for this one in advance. Another morn at SI. We've made it through day four. If you're staying on the same hall as me, I'm sorry about my squeaky door. I really tried not to open it very much in the middle of the night, but my gosh. Anne Van Cott, are you here? Hi. What's special about today? And... And is it a special birthday? Woo-hoo! And I was talking to Anne last night, and it's her 50th birthday on Friday the 13th. And 50 years ago, she was born on Friday the 13th. How about that? Yep. I also think there's another birthday, and I lost the paper. Is there another birthday that we know of? Oh, there's a heck of a lot of them. And Mike, happy birthday. Happy birthday, everybody. So wish everyone happy birthday, but especially the ones who really have birthdays. This set of keys has been in our possession since Sunday, and we're pretty sure that someone's going to need it tomorrow. It's a Honda car key It has a Cleveland Heights library tag on it and a whole bunch of interesting keys that look like they open really special things and funny shapes and stuff. So you'll want it. Pictures to Cliff for the slideshow can still come in today. Cliff is here. He'll be the guy in tie-dye. One of them. So Cliff would love to have your pictures if you haven't given him some and you wish to at lunchtime today. He will still be able to take some pictures at dinner, but you'll have far lesser chances of being on the slideshow with your photos if he gets them later in the evening at dinner time. So lunch would be great. Yes. I'll let Cliff have people go see Cliff and he'll do your email. It's on the slides, yeah. Okay, limited hard copies of the evaluation forms will be available at dinner tonight, so if you would prefer to do a pen and paper evaluation, we'd love to have your feedback. We prefer online, and you will have information in a couple of different ways about how to access those online, so we'll take care of that. The GA conversation continuation is happening this afternoon in Brandy Recital Hall, the hall behind us, at 3:15. Phil Smith, I want to touch base with you after announcements, please. Church banners. You need to take church banners home with us, and therefore they're going to come down after Vespers this evening. So we would appreciate it if whoever brought them plans on picking them up this evening, get them ready to go back with you. The big event last night, the arm wrestling match. Alan and Joel, I heard it was quite an event. I didn't manage to make it there myself. But it raised $150.17 for the scholarship fund. And yes, I understand there was quite a knockdown, drag-out fight between the fairies as well. Yes. okay, information about Saturday morning. I'm just going to review this because we do have a pretty strict timeline on Saturday and we need everyone's help with this. If you are a workshop leader, if you would help to communicate a little bit about Saturday morning to your workshops, not everyone is here this morning and it's really important that we have everyone on the same page with when we need to be out and away from Kenyon. They are receiving a group on Saturday following us. They've been great hosts to us and we hope to be great guests and patrons and support them in their needs on the day that we leave, as well as supporting ourselves and our needs because we're sad to leave. Breakfast is the same time on Saturday morning, 7 to 8:30. If you are staying in the AC dorms, any dorms or any housing on campus that has air conditioning, you need to be ideally moved out of your room by 9 a.m., but definitely fully packed with all your stuff off the floor, ideally on the bed. That's a good choice because that's your best surface. Get everything packed up, ready to go. They're going to start cleaning at 9 a.m. 10 a.m. is our closing ceremony here in Ross Hall. 11 a.m. following the ceremony is checkout, and that's when everyone needs to be on the way out of the dorm if they haven't already gotten themselves out. We need to have all of the keys turned in on the porch of Far Hall. Far Hall is in the little downtown area. It's the porch with the tables where you can sit and get Wi-Fi from the bookstore. We're going to be on that porch collecting keys tomorrow after the closing ceremony, and we need to have all of the keys in by noon, and we need to be out of all of the buildings by noon. So please plan accordingly. We will ask that you bag your trash in your rooms. Most often, the bags have been able to be left right in front of the door of your room in the hallway, so be conscious of bags of trash when you're moving. You can also take them to the bigger cans that are in your halls, and please remember we asked to not have dishes travel from the dining hall to your dorm rooms. If they have traveled, help us get them back over there so that we don't have to collect everything on the entire campus tomorrow. That is what I have for you. I'm double checking a message from the campus to make sure I haven't missed anything. Nope, we're good. It is 9:26. We will do our best to start the theme talk at 9:30. Thank you.